I'm going to have my, I would say my partner in crime, but that's probably not appropriate. Certainly somebody that I've worked with very closely over the last 4 years, particularly on this project, but it's more like 10. But in the four, we've actually brought an idea to fruition as a partner. So give a warm welcome to CTO of TPN. He was also the former chairman of the board, chairman emeritus of CDSA, and he has a day job at Amazon Studios running content security. Chris Davis. I love this. All right, so this is TPN by the numbers. And honestly, we are always in a situation where we want to be very real about what we're doing. Like, TPN was not built on hope, right? We started with an idea of hope that we can make lives a lot easier for people and basically the team that have to make these decisions day in and day out. But there's a practical reality around running a business and also scaling a business. When you're talking about for having every facility around the world that works with our content owners, as we call them, but they're really television, motion picture, content creators. They're really bringing in. So we try to be very real about our numbers, where we're at. This is just a very high level. We want to set the stage around a couple of things, and then absolutely open up to questions. It's more of a Q&A session. We have three parts of our constituency in here. We have studios, we have vendors, and we have assessors. We've done a pretty good job in the past of bringing those groups together in the appropriate spots, mostly together, right? Dealing with assessor issues, dealing with vendor issues, dealing with studio issues. But here we are at essentially year two, even though we've only been assessing really for about 18 months, 17 months. But now it's all coming together. And again, it's something where that dialogue is ultimately critical.
Thanks, turn it off. Where's Belinda?
All right. Is there some,
No worries,
it's promising. You know how many times I complain about the CTOs not being able to work the clicker on stage? Is it? There it is. No, hold on. Maybe it's going to happen. I see things. And now it's a little dark. But what you'll see here is though. I'll give it a minute to warm up.
Well, I'll tell you what. While Guy tries to get his laptop working, I'll just provide a brief recap. I think there's kind of broad familiarity with this joint venture, or broadly this venture that we've undertaken with respect to TPN. And I think the familiar output of this series of activities is the assessment. But there's a lot more to it. And as Guy mentioned, the last 24 months through two distinct phases. Phase one was entering into joint ventures with the NPA, and determining which of our constituents, across the 28 content owners, wanted to participate in mapping controls, all of the individual studio and network controls into a master control matrix that we would leverage, the common definitions in terms of service categories, the construct of the metadata and the platform we use, branding, setting up websites and mechanisms for vetting and assessing qualified assessors, awareness campaigns, other training activities. A number of kind of pieces have gone into creating the first iteration of TPN. Then we moved into executing assessments. I'm going to start talking about some of the metrics in a minute. Specifically relating to the audit program. So it's a multi-phase initiative. We have launched phase one, which is the site security assessments. And again, I'm sure most of you are familiar with this, but I'm just going to start with kind of level setting, just so we're all on the same page. And phase one represents meeting or exceeding the capabilities of the two joint venture partners. So the MPAA. The MPA now had their site security program. They would conduct between 40 and 50 facility assessments per year. And CDSA had their CPS audit program as well, and they did kind of similar numbers. They generally tended to net out around the 70 to 80 assessments per year in those locations, something like that. So phase one is deprecate those two programs. programs make sure that TPN's facility assessment service at least meets the capabilities of those two programs, and then start to look at additional services. Because, again, I really want to kind of dwell for a second on what we feel is the most important part of TPN, is bringing together all of these entities, bringing together all of this data. Yes, it's one, you know, ideally, it's one assessment to rule them all, but it's more important than that. It's a really broad international community of content owners, and actually other service providers that are affiliated somehow with the traditional content owner community. And getting in that common nomenclature, those common security requirements. So a lot of that heavy lifting is done. Some of the execution is done, but we really look at our launch phase being about 3 years. So we're at the end of the first year of execution of the assessments. So there are a number of things that are occurring. We're refining our qualified assessor routines. We're refining the platform itself, some of the automation, some of the capabilities of the platform. We're working with content owners to determine how many of their third-party assessments they want to continue to do in-house and what the rationale for that is, and transitioning to leveraging this centralized database. So really the main message is there. In terms of phase one, we're building up ahead of steam, but we're not at critical mass. Now, critical mass, some very rough numbers. The TPN community, when we sit together in our work groups and our various board meetings, estimate, we're talking about a community of about 5,000 service providers when it comes to facility assessments that are in scope for these type of assessments. And that's everything from visual effects, on-set production services, franchise-related manufacturing, that's our licensor, licensee control model that we're developing, so that could be Lego sets, plush toys that relate to
worldwide.
Yeah. So it's gradually expanding, so it's not just direct filmmaking related workflows. We're now looking at associated video games and franchise assets. So we've got that arc that we're working towards, and we've got some stats on the screen here. So we have about 1,500 of these service providers, of the 5,000 we've estimated, that are in some way working through participating in TPN. And there are two main types of TPN assessments in phase one. Your remote assessment, which is called TPN Lite. Fill out a questionnaire, somebody reviews your results and gives you some feedback. The bulk of these numbers here relate to the more thorough on-site assessment, where a qualified assessor travels out to the facility, conducts an assessment, produces a report. The report gets QC by the service provider and then by our governance team at the MPA, and then a series of corrective actions or remediation tasks provided, and it's entirely at the discretion of the service provider as to how any, anything in between of those non-conformities that they elect to remediate. Another important concept within TPN that you'll be familiar with is there is no approval, there is no pass, there's no fail, there is an objective assessment of the service provider's conformity to our controls, which are derived predominantly from the MPA best practices. So it is entirely at the discretion of the service provider to elect which of those controls. Generally, in discussion with the content owners they're working with in terms of what level of security. Not every facility should be Fort Knox, and TPN recognizes that and is not trying to over-index investment in security. It's really about common understanding this kind of broad concept of rising tide floats all boats are all. You know, there are lots of materials, there's lots of training opportunities, lots of kind of consultative guidance opportunities that the TPN framework presents. So everything we're going to talk about today is really about phase one. Just to repeat myself yet again, that's the facility-based site security assessments and the MPA and CDSA programs are now a year in the time long gone in terms of operating. So we have some additional programs that we have on the horizon for 2020, the app and cloud services that everybody will be familiar with. I don't think we're going to talk too much about that, but we can answer some questions today.
Sure.
On the March 2019 list, you showed 18 completed assessments. On the October 2019.
We haven't even talked through these numbers, bud. Hang on one second. Go ahead, finish your question.
Completed isn't listed under October.
Yeah, so, by the way, all right, so when you walk through these, also, we realized the idea of a completed assessment, this is also in terms of workflow and how we gauge the community and the feedback, right? We used to work towards completed, like done, closed, issues over, no remediations, you've solved them all, we're good. That was part of our moving from enforcement to community. Right, the idea of having an open assessment is not the end of the world, and we do want to see it works at all. And this is actually, it's illustrated on here because we stopped necessarily tracking this in the short term, right? Because we realized in April when we did our first numbers, it's like it doesn't seem like this is a really great number. And it was our struggle because when you're doing an assessment as the MPA or you're doing an assessment as a studio and you're coming in and saying, show me this, get this done, you know, fix that or we're not going to work together. That's a whole different realm than what we're trying to deal with TPM. The idea here is when you see these, in remediation is a better number. And there could also be in report reviews, right? So when you talk about it, we've done about 350 assessments in the last year. So when you compare that with the 40 of the MPA or 60 of the MPA and the 70 or 80 of the CDSA, we've doubled the amount of assessments that we've done in a year. And we've also moved into a voluntary realm in terms of this, where a lot of these people sign up. So this was also critical, right? The total in platform, we had 2,488 in March, and we had 2,936. So in a less than a six-month period, I'm sorry, I'm counting, but in 6 months, basically, we had 500 people organically enter into the system, whether that's through a schedule selection within the tool itself by a content owner or also through signing up on the website. I think those are also illustrative numbers in terms of growth. You also see something like this hold number, right? So out of this, we have active people, out of this 2,500, right? 1,500 are sitting in a state of hold, right? That means they're in the system. We have some basic top-level information about that company, but they haven't necessarily engaged in the assessment process. Somebody hasn't pushed them forward from the content owner side, or they haven't signed up via the website to say, hey, come assess me. And it's interesting because when you look at those numbers, we're not talking about, this isn't hockey stick growth, right? And we're sorting through also the pangs of being out in the wild. We started the audits in September, so we've only done about 14 months of assessments. And it's really about these last 6 months where we've recognized, okay, these are the hiccups and hurdles of actually being out in the wild and operating. That's the other reason for feedback, right, is to be able to say, who out there is running into a situation around the audit program, so that we can have that feedback and either develop the tool or develop the workflow so that we can overcome those hurdles. Because the reality is we've got to get to, we have almost 500 people in on-site assessment scheduling. We need to start cranking through these numbers quickly in order to meet that 3-year goal of flipping over to scale. It's also an annual assessment process. So that idea of it doubling each year, and we didn't want to wait around and say, okay, year one we do 250, year two we do 500, year three we do 1,000, year four we do 2,000. We get to year five, finally we're there. We're trying to accelerate. And because it's voluntary, also coming from two organizations that weren't really voluntary, right? That's also the culture shift. So when I'm up there on stage talking about moving from enforcement to community, it absolutely applies to what's going on in TPM. Right? So, and I'm sorry, I didn't know if I absolutely addressed your question, but
I'll add one data point because Roger, the number is missing. It's 388. So, with the way that now the metrics that we generate around completion are split into two parts. So, there's the assessment is complete once the report has been QC'd. So, in terms of the assessment phase, So that's 388 as of the end of last month. 388 reports have been completed, gone through that back and forth QC with the assessor, the assessment subject, and the independent governance QC team. In terms of completed in our terminology here is the full arc. It's vendors elect to remediate everything. So we're missing numbers on both sides. So you get more of an apples to apples comparison. We have been at a clip of about 50 completions per month. And again, a helpful comparison is what I mentioned earlier, the CDSA assessment program and the MPO combined doing about 70 to 80 assessments per year. We recognize that we're in our early stages, we've still got a lot to do. We are tracking to complete about 500 in our first year. I'm looking to pretty significantly increase that throughput in year two and year three before we start to stabilize.
When you look also at some of these numbers, right, and honestly, the ordering on this is a little poor, and my apologies, I should have reordered it before and done it in a more linear fashion, right? But the idea of these people are in scheduling, right? In order to get to scheduling, you have to complete your extended questionnaire, you have to submit it, and then you're able to choose an assessor and actually schedule your assessment in the tool. So we have almost 500 people who are waiting on the scheduling portion. The other piece that's important here is pending pre-assessment documents. Those are the people that have started the assessment process and gotten down the road, and maybe the initial questionnaire is small, 10 questions, right? You know, who are you, where are you, and what do you use? The service type and the asset type are critical, right? Because that also determines the length of your questionnaire on your extended questionnaire. The initial questionnaire is quick. Then you get that extended questionnaire, and it's like, and we're trying to message around this and train around this. You're like, oh, hey, look at this question. You know, do you have X, Y, or Z? You click yes, and then it pops down, and you get 10 more questions underneath it. So what happens is we see people in terms of the data on the platform is they're in there. They've done this before, whether it's a spreadsheet or whatever, and we'll see when they pause and see how long it takes them to actually get through that process. When they finish that long-form extended questionnaire, that's when they move into assessment schedule.
So there's one more question. I'm going to pick up one thing that anybody that's ever been the subject of an assessment tend to fill in the detailed technical questionnaires will attest to how painful it is, and doing it once is one thing, but many of, you know, as we were preparing for TPN, you know, speaking to service provider community, there are many service providers that were undertaking 8 to 12 of these assessments per year. Questionnaires are a little bit different, online, Excel spreadsheet, Word documents. One of the things that we're looking to refine is the applicability mapping of controls. So yes, there are some facilities that handle very sensitive content and quite a number of services that can have questionnaires, about 190 questions. So yeah, that pre-assessment document phase, very often that is a facility that is just dealing with the complexity of these assessment questionnaires, and that's something we're really looking to further improve and refine.
I would also say that, you know, also when you see that the numbers don't necessarily all add up, right? We also have some test records in there. It is a platform, right? And we're refining that. And we're working also with a company, data biz company, so that all this data isn't just a dump export into another spreadsheet. It's actually integrated into the tool. It spits it out. It eventually will be real-time within the platform, but the idea of being able to pop these metrics out into more easily digestible graphs and charts is a...
Because we asked that. Yes, good. I have a question from then on.
I was wondering, who is in scope for the TPN assessment? So I see the number changes, right, the overall number. We have around 3,000. Yeah. What is your target, and who is in scope? Is it every organization just doing one assessment, or if they have different offices? So how do you, how many assessments do you
have? The phase one is facility by facility. Any individual physical location that is receiving confidentially created assets, and they want to demonstrate it to their customers that they adhere to a set of industry security best practices. That's really the target audience.
Did you see the Ben Lim presentation? Right, where you put the, oh, sorry. But it's post-production, so it's everything from Yeah, it's
just US?
Nope, global. Simon, did you have something to add?
Yes, I have a question. There are facilities
that
have one headquarter and many smaller offices.
Satellites, yeah.
Satellites. Right now they have to fill questionnaires for every one of them and sign agreements for every one of them.
Yeah.
Can we
Well, we can't combine them, right? But by the way, that's a great suggestion. Right. One of the things also was, when you go on your annual renewal, right, so as a year's happened, we did our first assessments in September, so they come back. The idea is the questionnaire should pre-populate with the data from the previous year, right? So we get those feedback points, and it's like, it's when we put those into action, right, or somebody comes and says that exact thing, the feedback mechanism is critical. Because yes, we can change those things. We have to meet as a business and discuss it and make sure that it's all above boards and approved and what's the workflow and what happens, but then we develop and it changes. So it's not like an 18-month, two-year development cycle, like you know, putting a new button into an Avid or you know, an Adobe product, right? It's relatively streamlined, and honestly, it's your role as the CTO to guide Ben Schofield as the product manager. So Ben, make that note.
One second. Just quickly finish off.
Yes, sorry. I thought Simon was going to pile on that from a facility perspective.
Yeah, super quickly. There is a list of the service categories, as we call them, the service provider types listed on the internet, on our website. So if anybody isn't familiar, ttpn.org, yes, or thetrustedpartnernetwork.org. There's a ton of really helpful resources on there, including a list of all of the service the vendor categories that we have. Part that typically in scope, isn't it? It's not exclusive.
And you mentioned that some assessor provide a Word document, other Excel.
That's
the old school. Yeah.
Now everything is done within this master workflow.
Yeah, actually, you bring up a great point, right? Because we don't necessarily know the knowledge level. And I assume knowing a bunch of people in the room, I think all of you are mostly familiar with this program, right? In terms of knowledge of TPN, or do we need to do any more 101? Show of hands of who feels they know the program.
Okay.
All right. And by the way.
Yeah, two things. One is the pre-population for renewal already in place?
It's in place, but it's not released. Sorry.
We have a work group for platform enhancements. And again, this is part of there are some fixing this general development pipeline that we have to look at in terms of prioritizing. In some cases, it's just improving UX, moving fields to make various elements of the platform work more efficiently, and then enhancements, adding additional pieces of functionality. Again, we have a encapsulated workflow, so all of these assessments are managed through a workflow management service within the platform, but yeah, now there's opportunities to make user experience better.
The reason I ask is if you just got a
Are you ready? the other thing also, those things pop out, right? And we're running a software company, essentially, right? That runs an audit program because it's a platform. And it's when that feedback comes in, then we have to say, okay, this is a fix. We got to get into the development sprint. When do we get? We've probably done how many releases this year in terms of upgrades to TPN? At least four or five. But it's all fixing things in the background that aren't like, ta-da.
Right.
Right.
And one thing, I mean, I realize that you can't cover every scenario in the questionnaire. But the one simple thing that, and I don't know because we haven't seen it in a year, that we suggested early on is that you have on your, that just not a yes or no answer that then goes,
yes.
There are certain things that are not applicable to a particular.
Yeah, that's probably.
Because
that's
if we say no, it looks like we're not compliant.
Yeah, that's a
that's
a
big deal.
And by the way, getting over that compliance piece, right? You just said it, right? Compliant to who? To TPN? We don't run a compliance program.
No.
Right? But you know what I'm saying? And by the way, Shira in the first panel says, oh yeah, you know, whether you're TPN approved, it's like it's so casual for people to say certified or approved or compliant. And that's a huge challenge on our side.
Right.
You know, on websites, in print. You know, people are out there promoting this. Oh, we finally are TPN certified, and we're looking at it aghast because we're trying to change the culture around that. Of like, it's about approval from that customer and who you're working with. you may do all reality TV and stuff that has no, nothing.
And we're very specific about that.
Yeah.
Our we let them know that we've been assessed, and they can look at that assessment online.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean we didn't pass anything.
Right.
But you look at that assessment, you see if there's any questions you have, and we can have a discussion after that point.
Did you clear all your remediations?
Oh yes. Okay, one other question then.
By the way, this is it. Also, open it up. This is obviously this is a vendor facility. I'd love to hear from content owners and such.
If there's a recommendation for remediation, but that recommendation doesn't fit in our workflow, but we have a remediation that works just as well, then is that remediation available and visible to the client when they go and look at the assessment?
Yes. So there are two materials that are available to the content owners that participate in TVN. There's the assessment report, and there's a redacted remediation tracker. So yeah, they would see on a high level any actions that you would like to take relating to those non-conformities. One quick thing I wanted to add on this topic is because there is no pass-fail, because there is no certification, we're trying to dispel any kind of remaining misunderstanding about those concepts, because we do have some vendors that our service providers that try to fix everything before the assessment starts because they're worried that they might fail. And that is, we're trying
it's huge.
Create awareness about this. The way that this process works best is if you have the assessor come in, they will give you a pretty prescriptive punch list of what you should do. So there's really no benefit in second guessing what remediation plan might be, because in many cases there's overinvestment, there is investment in solutions that actually aren't really good fit. So that would be a message we're trying to kind of get out there. There's no need to study for the test, get familiar with the controls, the MTFS practices, but don't feel that you need to lock things down before the assessor comes in, because the content owners aren't looking for a first time pass. There isn't any expectation in the process for that.
Sorry, go ahead. Question?
Yeah, I don't know if you were going to guess this, but I was curious on the content owner perspective.
Yes.
Especially for the smaller content owners,
yes.
Newer or smaller, are they still able to participate and have access to applications without becoming a member and paying? I mean, how does it work financially at this point for new content owner participants?
So, yes, the least expensive path to participate, and you do have to be a member, and you either have to be a member of the MBA, mm-hmm. you have to be a governing board member of ACE, or you need to be a member of CDSA. So we've talked that extensively with the MBA. And content owners have rolled on through the CDSA because they realize it's a nice low-cost option. We also have MBA members who it's quote-unquote double dip, but certainly a different economic scale. But this is what's important, and this is what we also talk to about people. Say, hey, you have a TPN assessment? They can share a TPN. They paid for that assessment, much like when they paid for a CDSA. So you participate by saying, oh, do you have a TPN assessment? And they're like, oh, no. But if they say yes, you're like, can I see it? It's theirs.
So they have a way to share. So
yes,
if they're not
outside of the
that,
tool.
On the portal, like the vendor can then still share it with that content owner that's not a member.
Yeah, there is a capability. We're trying to discourage
yes. sharing of those reports through your
files around. There's
yes.
some sensitive yes. information. I mean, that's one of the benefits of the closed kind of wall right. ecosystem, all of the communications, the back and forth discussion between the facility and the qualified assessor regarding the remediation plan, QC, the questionnaires, everything, nothing traverses email, nothing is in plain text.
And I would also say that there's benefits to joining the community, because from a feedback perspective, we have a set group of committees that work on governance and operations, and they work on technology and development, and outreach in the community, and finance and budget. But that's also where the rubber really hits the road in terms of like prioritizing fixes. It truly is a village. I mean, it is a group effort. So we encourage people to have a dialogue and understand what's on the roadmap, where are we going. We are very public, I think, about most everything that we're doing at TPN.
We spoke this morning as a great example of a small studio that doesn't want to build out their own assessment program. They don't come in, but they tend to be very expensive and high kind of resource constraint service. So actually, some of the entities that benefit most from this are this sort of.
And basically, just join CDSA or Connect, and then you don't have to pay an additional.
And it's not like a seat license or anything like that.
It has to be officially member.
Yeah, we have to control who we get access to this information. Obviously, as a service provider, you don't want another service provider to see your records. So there's a lot of kind of role-based access on it.
What's going on over there?
You take it out in post.
It's a great question. There's a really, really low barrier, financial barrier of entry, but there is a barrier, and that is part of our governance model.
Absolutely.
Of the numbers, near 3,000, is it the content owners that are driving the membership or the participation, or is it the service providers?
Yeah, that's what's so great. It's a great question. In terms of this jump on the 500 records, I know that 300 of those came from the web. Now, I don't know if they stumbled around and saw an article or if they spoke to somebody on the phone and they said, hey, go sign up at ttpn.org. But it's not all. The seed, the original seed on the 3,000 was a content owner seed, CDSA, MPA, various constituents to say. That's why we have 1,500 in hold, too, because those are people that they've worked with but may not be a priority in terms of assessment. So but yes, the answer is it's
a good way to gauge if it really is a community, because if the service providers are saying they want to be part of that, then that's got to be a good thing.
Right.
That's
a lot of the feedback that we get is, and again, I want to kind of reiterate my earlier statement, we're on a path to this being a mature, robust program that we all want it to be. But we get a lot of feedback from the vendor community that they have been looking for a single authoritative framework, a single authoritative assessment that is industry specific, where they can demonstrate their security posture and they can learn about things that they need to undertake to improve their security posture. So it's definitely, we don't have a way at the moment of determining, okay, an assessment request came in, this was the vendor just arbitrarily choosing to do this, or whether or not they were nudged by content owner.
It would look like a refer a friend.
That would be great. Right? But here's the other thing that's interesting, right? We have a question on there that says, what content owners do you work with, right? Our industry is trained not to reveal who they work with. It's not something that easily just flows, we've got X, Y, and Z, no problem, right? We get emails all the time that are like, do I have to complete this question? Right? And we're looking also at as cues and clues. When we developed it, there was also something that said, if they're working with 6 content owners and there was an issue around who goes first, right? You go with the person, if it was somebody that hadn't worked with any content owners and has, six gigs, it's like, it's meant to be a hierarchy then, to say, you're engaged, you're more in the stream. To target us to say, where do we put the effort, where do we put the resource? I wish that was the case where it was like, we can only do 10 audits today. Which 10 are we going to do? But I will also say, in terms of qualified assessors in the room, that I think we've come a long way in 19 in terms of tipping it over where it's becoming more evident that this is the path that we're on. Those remediation questions and issues, we've been slowly chipping away at the culture around it so that we are seeing more speed and more throughput. I think I can be honest in saying the average time is around 60 days to complete an assessment, which you look at it, it's like, that's insane, right? And we battled that when it came out, like, this is taking us 6 days. Now, there are companies that have done it in as little as 20 days, right? So it's about motivation, preparedness. What we realize is there's all these different variables around it that drive that. It's different when we're coming in, it's like, we're doing this now, we're enforcing force of force. But when you leave the community, it's like, this happened, and I had to go, we had a 2-day holiday, right? Things just end up slower. That's where we're looking to have that saturation and churn, so that it's not like, I need this Tuesday, right? That's what we're dealing with now, is that transition, because it's like, it's not in there. They're in a hold state. I got to go out and call them and figure it out. So when we get to this 2 or 3 year saturation and scale, that's when it becomes like, ah, this is the natural flow and the rhythm. And when you go on there, you identify that vendor and say, oh, yes, okay, they're in, they were assessed back in wherever. And forgive me if I'm speaking out of turn.
No, no.
We're almost out of time, by the way.
Okay, 2 minutes. Say we're between all of you and drinks. The alcoholic beverage. So keep the questions coming as long as you want. We'll answer any questions you have. There was a point that I just wanted to kind of just provide a little bit more detail on, which is around one of the fundamental concepts of TPN was not having a single assessment partner. So both the MPA program and the CDSA program before, they had a single service provider entity conducting the assessments. So with the MPA, that was Deloitte, they had PwC. With the CDSA, they had a licensed entity that had their assessor employees. TPN has a qualified assessor portal. So anybody who wants to participate in TPN can sign up, assuming they meet the eligibility requirements, sit a proctored exam, take a background check, and then it's kind of like Uber. You're in the system and you can, raise your hand and bid for a ride as the assessment request coming through. And that is the model. So that the important thing, is it actually a number that we didn't have the exact number for, but in terms of the number of qualified assessors and where they're geographically located, because that's an important part of our ability to scale, be nimble, to turn assessments around quickly, just to have geographically dispersed qualified assessment entity. But it's a really stringent qualified assessor process. That should be reassuring for everybody in this room that only a small number of assessors make it through this process. So we got somewhere around 180 over the last year. Just that final ramp up period before we went live, and then last August, September, when the program started running, to where we are now. We're really about, as I said, about a year of operational state. So around 180 qualified assessor requests. Exactly 96 of those submissions met the eligibility requirements and were moved on to the next stage, which was sit down and take the proctored exam, and then only 37 of those individuals passed all of those three stages, the eligibility requirements, the proctored exam, and the background check.
I will say also we had experienced assessors in our business, lots of pedigree, lots of years of experience, fail. And we also have people who are entirely new to our industry, pass.
Yep.
So but by that magical quadrant of combination, we said this is a good test and this is a good program.
Only 37 are active, by the way?
I would say 32. We have, there were people that come in, drop out. Chris Taylor was a qualified assessor. He's semi-active. What? Oh, there you go. Sorry. I was looking over the chair. The chair! Chris Taylor, qualified assessor. But obviously, due to his work with the ISAC, and yeah, is slowing it down, right? We're also very cautious. The MPA governs us, right? So we don't want conflict of interest. We want to make sure that everybody's happy and in. Simmons, be an experienced qualified assessor. How's your experience been in terms of TPN?
Actually,
lovely. you're the Uber driver. I hate that analogy.
Sorry.
Maybe a Lyft driver. No, but that's the idea. We talked early and you said, I was thinking about it, what do you think? I said, go for it. You'd be perfect for this.
So how much money do you make?
Those are the things that we never talk about. Yeah. Question in the back?
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I'm one of the 37 as well. Seems like a meeting. Hi, I'm Mark. I'm a QA. I had a question around the extended questionnaire you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
Is it a technical or political decision not to have access to that? Because for quoting, I often end up asking exactly the same questions, and customers come back and say, I already filled it out. Can't you look it up? And then I'm like, no, I can't, unless you pick me, and you don't pick me unless you get a quote, and you don't get a quote unless you give me that information.
Yes.
So that's a bit painful.
I'll give you a maybe overly honest answer here. So maybe this is just for within these four walls. The joint venture that is the TPN, it's constructed of the CDSA, we who we all know and love, and the MPA, who we all know.
I'm sorry.
They're a very legal oriented organization. So we have most of our representatives on the TPN board are lawyers. So there is a lot of rigor into the legal process. So yes, the question is, don't get released until the assessment agreement and the non-disclosure agreements within that agreement are signed.
I'm instantly sweating. That's so funny. I talked about lanes, right? I talked about lanes and also managing. Right? It is hot work, by the way. But it literally just started right because I laughed so hard. But I talked about staying in lanes. And that's really what we were trying to do. And I talked also earlier, and I don't know if it was here or if it was on the main stage, about the operational mission kind of and who we are as CDSA, right? We're on the front lines doing the work day in, day out. And I think part of that relationship, you said it, right? Is it political, right? Or it's kind of a combination of both. And it's also the same thing around getting people not to say that we're approved or that we're certified. It's like, this really is a sea change. And I'll be a little bit honest, and let's keep it within these four walls. It was almost like February of this year where it really tipped, where everybody turned from, look, we had a certain amount of people that were like, it'll never work. This will never happen. You're crazy. It's a folly. You'll spend all this money and waste all this time. But we believed in this for a long time. And we said, if we get over the hump and get it launched, and come to an agreement, we can make it work.
Use all these little, it's comfort factor from the lawyers and refining the platform and getting a broad, common understanding of what this is all about. Those are things that take time. So that's part, when we talk about that three-year arc, it's not just about critical mass in terms of volume and assessment, it's all of these other awareness, brand, just smoothing off the rough edges that exist within the process. So, those of you that have submitted improvement requests, enhancement requests, suggestions, keep them coming. Just because you may not have seen them manifest themselves, some of those things, there's funding, there's a lot of kind of consensus review before things get prioritized and stack ranked. It doesn't mean that we're not listening. So please, if you have any suggestions, we really, really want that feedback.
And I would say finally, because I want to drink badly. that's been a long few days. But I would also say that when you talk about that control framework and that questionnaire, we're trying to learn from site security in terms of launching app and cloud. And that's also the work that Chris Taylor's doing, the work that Ben's doing, the work that our teams are doing in that space. We're trying to learn these lessons so that we can accelerate and move quicker, because we do have a certain amount of the constituency on the content owner side and on the vendor side that knows this is going to be far more complex. It's going to be very different than the site security model in terms of annual checkup and site security visits. This is going to be more persistent and active in the background. As we weave that fabric that I also talk about quite often, that will be how Hollywood runs, kind of probably in perpetuity after the next 20 years. But as we weave that fabric, it's absolutely critical that we're agile and we learn and make it adaptable. So I do think it's the culture change that is also most difficult. And by the way, once everybody got over the hump, then it was like, when do we get to scale? Can't you be there by the end of the year? And it's like,
why can't we do 1,000 assessments in the first year?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you got to make it to 1,500 or else. It's like, whoa, all right, hold on, slow down. It does take a village. And honestly, it does take a village.
Just gentleman had a question just before I answer, before we change.
Yes, quite. You have a question, sir?
Yeah. So from vendor's perspective, is there any kind of support function that's in the plan or currently that you may have in place for vendors to reach out and seek advisory services?
All right, that's a really good question.
That's great.
And it is a fundamental part of the TPN framework that is not, we haven't really kind of done any awareness or any kind of marketing around this. There are a few different facets of the TPN program. One is the difference between remote assessments and on-site assessments. There are two other capacities that a qualified assessor can serve. One is as the assessor for this particular assessment, and then alternatively as a consultative advisor. So they can do one but not the other. We have kind of just a delineation of responsibilities, conflict of interest model that means an assessment can do one or the other. And they can provide those services in advance of the assessment for those A-star vendors that really want to kind of get a perfect clean report, or on the remediation consulting side. So actually, again, I'm going to refer you back to our website, ttpm.org. There is a page that lists all of our qualified assessors, and you can reach out to any of those qualified assessors and leverage them for those advisory services if you wish. Just bear in mind that unless you submit an exception request and get that approved by the TPM board, ordinarily they can't then also be your assessor. So
those advisory services, if the vendor chooses to work through advisory services, would that services also be QC'd by TPN as well?
So I'm not sure I answered the question. So you're saying so if they looked at the best practices and they were preparing for an assessment,
yep,
and then they implemented some service to address control.
Based on the advisory services that they received, the TPN services that they chose?
Okay, so actually, no, I understand the question. So that is exactly why we have that delineation of responsibility. So the advisor, the individual who is providing those consultative services, cannot then conduct the assessment.
But they would have been already
measured their own
work. You can validate your own homework.
Yeah. Right, so there is no really QC process for the advisory, just consulting side.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. The QC really happens in the audit. But by the way, that's also a suggestion that you start talking about that. If that's a need out in the marketplace.
But as Glenn says, if you go to the site, you're picking up a qualified assessor, they would have already had that. They've gone through that sheet, they've gone through the QC process anyway, so, and they're bringing the experience of doing all that.
Sure, yeah.
You know, but like a pre-flight check, I don't necessarily know.
I would be interested in feedback if I don't believe, at least, I mean, you've seen the numbers, so we do kind of post-mortems on the assessments, and we kind of look for areas of improvement. I don't think I've seen a scenario where a qualified assessor operating in an advisory capacity has conducted work in advance of an assessment, and then there's been a conflict between where the assessor has disagreed with any of those actions. I don't think that's yet manifested itself, but it's an interesting scenario that we should probably think through. That's a good question.
That was great.
In my experience, it's smaller shops ask for that, and it's really more basic problems you're solving with these guys. The more complex situations are usually bigger shops, and they have their own folks that do a lot of the prep work. So that's why I don't see a conflict necessarily existing there.
Well, and we all still smart from the Larson incident, right, where they got a ton of consultative pre-services, and it did pretty much not.
But not affiliated to any.
Not affiliated to what we're doing. That was 2015, by the way. Right, but the idea is that was also the reaction where it's like, we need to have all these people that are trained in India. Every one of these assessors, they take a proctored exam at an MTA facility around the world, right? So we've done it in Singapore. You guys know, nobody saw my number.
It's on.
The wrong screen, though, right? Hold on. I'm over here looking at it, thinking you guys are following along with me. What? Three fingers white? No. Hold on.
Oh dear.
There. Well,
that's what I was looking at.
Almost. Missed.
There.
Hey, look at that.
Oh, there's some. Look how happy that qualified assessor.
Look at that. I'm really happy. But this shows you also some of their geolocations.
This is a pretty helpful resource. If any of you are not familiar with this, go to it, bookmark it. There's a ton of helpful stuff on there.
I was going to say also, our content on our list. This gives you an idea of the companies who are involved.
Any last questions before?
Before we go out to
wine?
Yes. And actually, full bar, man. It's holiday party. Let's go. Drive safer. What do you think? And the other thing also is, we have a hotline. We have a TPN hotline phone number. It's on the website. We have emails for vendor, assessor, content owner. We are here to listen and to react. I think we're also going to see a lot of progress. 19 was a big transition year for us as we kind of baked everything with our individual communities and heard the feedback and complaints. and also the success stories, because we do see a lot of it. I get every TPN email that comes through the platform as a CEO, just because I'm interested in knowing what's going on out there. So feel free to reach out, come contact us, whether it's a studio representative, or there's an assessor, or even fellow vendors. We should all be in this together. I think that's what we're trying to
do. I should say, just in final closing, a huge thank you to those of you that have participated in any manner in the TPN, undertaking the assessments, contributing, providing feedback, and a huge thank you to our qualified assessors that are here today. The work that they've been doing is, again, they're the few that made it through the rigorous qualified assessor process, and the work that they've been doing is fantastic.
And our content owners, by the way. Because, look, we've talked a lot. This has been it's a labor of love, but it's certainly something that is not like, oh, yeah, forget about it. We'll do it tomorrow.
No, it's a labor.
Everybody's all that. All right. Thank you so much. Thanks to everybody who's listening today.